Musings Podcast with Fairbairn and Russell. Right, okay, that's recording. Hello and welcome to the Market Musings podcast, where today we're joined by Oliver Friesen, who is, of course, the CEO of GMR, that's Golden Metal Resources, which is a spin-out coming out of Power Metal Resources. So we did speak to Tristan before, who's heading up FDR, but of course the other spin-out that's looking after the North American side of all the Power Metals projects and putting it into their own vehicle to go on its own is Oliver. So welcome, Oliver. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on, gents. Looking forward to chatting.
Yeah, it's good to talk to you, get some insight into where you've come from and what you want to do. And Kenny, of course, you're here. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all good, Mark. It's great to have you on, Oliver. We've spoken briefly before in the past, so I've been looking forward to this for a few weeks. And, you know, it's a lovely day in Scotland here. The sun's out. It's a bit cold, but, yeah, it's all good. Take the good weather in Scotland when it comes. And I think you're in London, Oliver, is that right?
That's correct, yes. And it is rainy and dreary in London, but can't complain too much. It's been a pretty nice winter and with lots of sun. So I'll take the rain when it comes.
Yep. Mark, and what's it like in Holland, Mark?
It's like, I think I've got your weather, Kenny. It's nice and sunny and blue sky. So I'm quite
good,
pleased.
It's good. Definitely. But no, it's great to have you on, Oliver. And as we said before we started recording, you know, we like to get the CEOs on or directors of a company and get a kind of potted history of what you've been up to in your life, you know, both childhood, education, career-wise, et cetera. And the reason why we do this is that we believe, you know, you could have a 10 million ounce gold deposit, but if you had a shower idiots running the company, then it's never going to work and it'll just be a disaster. So you need to have the right people in place to manage the projects. So really, this is sort of your opportunity as the CEO of Golden Metal Resources to come on and basically tell us a bit about yourself, you know, what motivates you, what drives you, successes, failures, how you get into geology, you know, did you run about the hills, you know, with a rock hammer? Because some of the guys we've had on, you know, that's literally what they've done. So, but everybody's different, you know, everybody's got a different path, how they get into this role. So probably for the next 10, 15 minutes, Oliver, this is a chance for you just to tell us a bit about yourself and where you've came from and where you're going ultimately.
Yeah, no, that's great. In terms of how I got into geology, it's a bit of a contentious story at my house, but I'll get into that in a little bit here. So I guess, yeah, going way back, born and raised in Vancouver, BC. So for the listeners who don't know, Vancouver is sort of essentially the mecca of junior mining. Before my time was the old Vancouver Stock Exchange days. And there's some pretty wild stories that I'm told by some of the older gents in the industry about the things that happened on the VSX. But sure enough, growing up in Vancouver, you know, you're exposed to the junior mining industry and the mining industry as well. You know, some big mining companies have headquarters in Vancouver as well. So it's sort of in our blood, whether we admit it or not. You know, BC is a great place to look for mines and to mine, and anywhere up sort of West Coast, North America as well. I mean, up to the Yukon, Alaska. So it's something that, you know, I was exposed to from a young age, used to see things in the paper. And the reality is, and I don't quote me on this, but I was told that 60% of businesses out of Vancouver either are in mining or support the mining industry. So obviously it's very prevalent in Vancouver and everything we do there. So, you know, I grew up in Vancouver and decided to go to UBC, which is kind of the biggest university in town there, University of British Columbia. And was just sort of, you know, trying to figure out, you know, what path to take. Now, I ended up taking a few geology courses in my first year. They're just kind of testing the waters and ended up really, really loving it. You know, I took kind of a smattering of different things and they were the courses that got me the most interested. Now, you know, kind of, you know, fast forward a couple of years with my geology degree from UBC, people always ask, well, how did I end up in geology or why geology? And funny enough, my grandma, when I was really young, you know, between 5 and 10 would drive me and my brother around, all over Western North America. Really, we went as far south as California, Arizona. And we would drive and go to rock and gem shows. So we would sort of follow the line of shows and wind up in kind of random towns throughout Western USA and Canada, and just be looking at cool rocks and gems. So, my grandma does take credit for my career in geology. I have to give her a bit of credit as well, because I, you know, that's it, it's funny how that sort of serendipitously worked out, with sort of my, you know, running around the Western US looking at rocks and gems when I was a young kid. But yeah, went to UBC and took some geology courses, loved it. You know, first, that was a time in the industry when metals were doing quite well, back in sort of mid 2005, 2006, 2007. So sure enough, first, second year, third year summers, you know, being in Vancouver, geologists were in high demand. So my first summer, I got a job with a company up in the Yukon Territory, which is the province north of BC. So I actually went up there as soon as school was out for the summer, UBC was out for the summer. And I actually ended up working 96 days in a row. I didn't take a single day off. I actually set an unofficial record at the company, while everyone else was, you know, heading back to Vancouver for, you know, breaks here and there. I just kind of stuck it out and went for it. I was loving it. It was a fun summer. It was in the middle of absolute nowhere. Essentially you fly into Whitehorse, Yukon, which is, the capital of the province there, the territory. You take about, I think it was a 6-hour drive to a small town called Faro. And from there you take about an hour long helicopter to a camp in the middle of nowhere. And so that was kind of where I worked for the first summer. It was a drill camp, and we were looking for, it was actually a tin copper silver skarn property. And sure enough, it kind of was the summer that got me really hooked on the industry. And the reason for that was, we were drilling, as I mentioned, for that skarn deposit, and we ended up hitting some really interesting stuff, in a lot of the drill holes. Now I remember this very vividly, because I was a first year geology student. And, you know, so I was just sort of learning the ropes and just doing whatever had to be done. But all these geologists who were a bit older, you know, out of university or senior geologists, you know, they were all, you know, papered up with options or stock in the company. And sure enough, there was some really exciting stuff coming out of the drill holes there. I remember every day I did a lot of different jobs there, but I would work at the core shack, logging core, geoteching, and the helicopter would fly up to the drill rig way in the mountains, and it would fly back to camp with the core, and it would land in the core yard, and we'd all unpack it, and we'd start looking through the boxes, and there was some really good looking stuff in there. And sure enough, the assays came back, and they were actually really, really good. And I, you know, once again, I'm first year geology student. I don't know much at the time, but I'm just sort of soaking everything in. But sure enough, you know, we started to put out some results, and the stock went from, I think, a low of about 30, 40 cents Canadian. And shortly after we put out some of the discovery holes, the stock had gone up to over $7. And I remember, because a lot of the geologists that had options in stock in the company, they were definitely in a good mood. They were in a very good mood. And, you know, sure enough, it was just exciting to be around and to see that. And funny enough, a lot of the geologists that I worked with at the time, they weren't as passionate about the industry as I was, I guess, but, a lot of them took their winnings. A lot of them made, you know, north of $1 million Canadian overnight, essentially. And some of them, I know them to this day, retired and opened up breweries or restaurants and kind of just left the industry at the, you know, mid 20s, late 20s. So that was sort of their MO. They weren't as into the industry and the rocks as I was, but sure enough, to kind of be around that for your first summer of work, That's pretty infectious, and you see the potential to make discoveries, how exciting that is and how much money can be made. So I was very, very blessed to be able to do that. So following summers, same sort of thing. I actually ended up working for the same company back in the Yukon. I did all the grunt work that needed to be done, soil sampling through, knee-high swamps. There's moose everywhere. You're looking out for bears. It was some pretty wild stuff I did. I have some pretty crazy stories. I won't tell them on this podcast because there might be some safety infringements from the company that employed me. But it's a good way to get your feet wet in the industry. I find as a geologist now who kind of works more on the corporate side, it's super important to do all that stuff, to do the soil sampling, to do the geophysics, to do all that grunt work. Because that way, when you're running these programs now, you're overseeing them, you understand what these guys are going through. And there's good days and there's bad days. In the Yukon, I remember specifically, the mosquitoes up there, you would be swarmed by literally hundreds, if not thousands at any given time. So you'd try to stop for lunch, you'd wrap yourself up in your helicopter flag and try to just, keep your sanity for 5 minutes while you ate food, because the only way to get away from them was to keep moving.
You've never been to Scotland and faced the midges then, have you?
I have not yet, but it's funny because when I tell people about that, they always tell me you got to go to Scotland. So once I do, I'll make sure to give you the comparison between the Yukon and Scotland there, Kenny. But I've heard Scotland can be pretty bad as well, so I'm sure you feel some of my pain.
Definitely.
Yeah, so it was fun. It was you spend your nights after work, you'd go to the lakes on top of the mountain, the helicopter would fly you up and you'd fish lakes that had never been fished before. So it's a super fun industry. Being a geologist is super interesting. You get to see some absolutely incredible things. So it got me hooked on the industry. So finished my degree at UBC in geology and was sort of looking to get more sort of on the potentially academic side at the time. So I actually went across town to a university called Simon Fraser. They actually had one of the world leading researchers in sedimentology, which is one of the obviously main branches of geology. So I wasn't quite ready to figure out what I want to do for the rest of my life. Actually, funny enough, I had a few sort of full-time job offers from different companies that I had worked for, but wasn't really ready to make the plunge yet. Wanted to do a bit more schooling before it was sort of too late. So went straight to SFU, as I mentioned, and studied sedimentology. Ended up actually finishing my master's in the shortest amount of time that anyone at SFU had ever done it. I think it was just over a year and 6 months. So that was a good accomplishment and did quite well in that and learned a lot in that sedimentology degree. And then sure enough, I was looking for a bit more adventure and took 8 months off just kind of while I had the chance to do it and traveled around the world and kind of wanted to see a bit more of the world before I really settled down with my career. I was still a young man at the time, so I figured that was the time to do it. And so I did that and sort of traveled around and saw a lot of great places and then got back and got in contact with a few of my former colleagues at SFU who were thinking about starting a consulting company, a geological consulting company. So we did that. We started a company and this is back about 6 or 7 years ago now. We started small. We sort of were scrapping for different contracts here and there, running soil sampling programs for various public companies, geophysics, a few small drill programs, whatever we could do. This was at a time when metals were in a bit of a bear market. So it was tough to find work. And actually, funny enough, just as a sort of a side note, most of my colleagues from UBC in geology had left the industry. It's very cyclical. So the people who aren't really into it and don't love it, they tend to get weeded out pretty quickly. So I think I graduated with about 30 people from UBC, which is actually one of the larger and more well-respected geology programs in the world. I think there's about 7 of us left in the industry. So there's obviously a massive labor shortage coming up here, but that's sort of a side note. But yeah, we were sort of scrapping for contracts with our consulting company and started to grow the business, you know, built up the network. We were essentially doing everything that we could do in mostly in Western Canada. So mostly in BC, Yukon, a few jobs took us to Newfoundland and Labrador, which is east coast of Canada. And then we started to work into the US. We had some opportunities in Idaho, Nevada. So started to work on those jurisdictions. So we all had the TN visas. So we could pass the border from Canada to the US quite easily. So that was quite nice to start to get exposed to a new jurisdiction. You know, Idaho at the time was quite underexplored and there was a lot of potential. So you start to learn the American system and kind of, you know, how things operate down there, and continue to grow the business. And ultimately what happened was we were doing work for public companies, junior mining companies, most of them headquartered in Vancouver, actually a lot of them in Toronto as well, but they traded on the CSC or the TSX or the TSXV. But you start to get exposed to the industry a bit more. Obviously I had that big sort of discovery. I was involved with my first year geology school, which was, you know, about 12 years prior. But we started to get more involved on the corporate side, the commercial side of the business. We ended up actually starting our own company from scratch, and we ended up listing that company on the Canadian Stock Exchange, the CSE. And I actually went on as the CEO of that company. That was about 4 years ago now. And we actually ended up doing a deal with a company called EMX Royalties. They're sort of a very well-respected project generator based out of Colorado. We did a deal on a handful of assets they had in Idaho, and we were full on. So I raised, I think it was about $5 million Canadian for that company, in a couple of different placings. All of them were done at a premium to the market cap at the time. We had a really exciting portfolio of projects. Now I'm still a director of that company. It was really interesting to be working sort of full time in the States. Now, obviously we were still working on our consulting company. That was sort of our main thing, but this was sort of our first big foray into the junior mining and the commercial side of the business. And then sure enough, Gold Lion, the company that I was CEO of, is still going. We should be drilling a couple of properties this summer. I'm just a director now, so I've taken a bit of a backseat on that one as I focus on things here in London. But we ended up actually selling the consulting company, which was sort of an outcome that we didn't really expect. We had grown the business up quite a bit, actually, from the early days where we were just scrapping for contracts. Ended up, I think, the one summer would have been 2019, 2020. I think we had about 35 or 40 people that we were overseeing and managing in the field on about four or five different drill projects. So we'd grown the business quite a bit. We had seen a lot of different jurisdictions. We'd seen a lot of different mineral properties. We had done a lot of different projects. We had managed a lot of big programs. We had made some discoveries. You know, there was one porphyry copper discovery that stands out in Northwest BC that we sort of, you know, we were the soil sampled it, then we did geophysics, and then we drilled it and made a discovery. So it was great to see that sort of that discovery come about from start to finish. But the company ended up selling, which was a great outcome. And that was about a year ago now. And then sure enough, was sort of looking for that next challenge. And I had made some contacts through various prior companies I had sort of been involved with. And so sure enough, I was like looking for a sort of a new challenge and ended up coming over to London. You know, the thing about Vancouver is it's a great resource market. But you typically work on a lot of the same jurisdictions and it's a relatively small industry. So I figured, you know, I'm young, pretty young guy. I'd like to sort of expand my horizons. And so I made the move over to London and got in touch with Paul. who I had met sort of through another contact. And we sat down about 9 or 10 months ago now. And funny enough, when I told the guys I was moving over, and the plan was originally to continue to kind of work on a lot of the stuff I was doing in Canada, but sure enough, moved over. And the guy said, okay, when are you here? This is the middle of the pandemic sort of thing. And they had said, you know, when are you here? We'll pick you up from the airport. We got to get started. So I knew these guys were movers and shakers and they had lots going on. Wasn't really ready to commit at the time, but sure enough, went into their office, about a week or two after I landed, I think after I did the full quarantine, and met the guys and was really, you know, interested in what they were doing. They were, you know, a vibrant sort of bubbly group that had lots of ideas. And I sort of fit in quite nicely with my, you know, background in project management, in geology, and exploration, in looking at properties, doing due diligence, and on the commercial side, having recently raised $5 million Canadian for a public company in Canada, working in Western USA quite extensively. That was sort of something that got them really interested. So we just started to sort of slowly work together and let the relationship build. And, you know, pretty shortly after I got there, Paul was sort of, you know, we started talking about, you know, opportunities to spin out new companies out of power. That was sort of the model. So sure enough, I ended up coming on as exploration manager of power, with their, you know, large, you know, asset portfolio. They needed someone to help continue to push those assets forward. So that was what I was sort of mostly focused on, but we started to see really great opportunities in bringing new listings to the market here in London. What I always found just interesting was back in Canada, you know, on the CSE, the TSX, TSXV, NYSE, the big boards, you know, I counted there's actually north of 25 different junior mining companies that are operating or exploring in Nevada. And that's for good reason, because Nevada is the top ranked jurisdiction in the world. And it's one of the most mineral endowed jurisdictions in the world. And most importantly, it's one of the best places to put mines into production. So there's a reason there's so many companies doing it in that trade in Canada. And a lot of them have, you know, very high market caps, because what they're doing is very exciting. It's not like there's a bunch of companies that are trading at 1-2 million cap. These are big companies doing this. Yeah. And so sure enough, we said, well, you know, in London, there's almost no way to get exposure to this excellent mining jurisdiction. So let's do that with my experience and knowledge and network in Nevada. Let's build a package here that we can bring to the markets that will allow people to get exposure to Nevada. So that's what we started doing. We brought in the first asset, Golconda Summit, through a contact of mine. We started to build a portfolio up, and fast forward, I guess 9 months, and here we are. We're getting close to a listing, and there's a lot of exciting stuff going on. We've done our pre-IPO financing, so it's all coming together. And actually, one thing I forgot to mention is you know, after school, before I went right into my master's, I actually did a work program, or I got a contract with Barrick Gold. This is important because it's sort of come full circle now with gold and metal. But I went and worked for Barrick Gold out of university, and went down to their Cortez Hills property. Now, I went and lived in Nevada, and was working at Cortez Hills, and we ended up making a pretty sizable discovery at the time. Now, I was sort of managing a handful of core loggers and was involved with sort of drill planning, that type of thing. But this was a super exciting time. You know, I remember, you know, logging certain holes. And this is, you know, Cortez Hills is a Carlin type gold property. That's really important, because our Golconda Summit is a Carlin type gold property, and they're deposits that are very exclusive to the state of Nevada. And most of the large gold mines in Nevada are Carlin type properties. So I was working at Cortez Hills with Barrick Gold, one of the largest gold mining companies at the time. They've now since merged and with Newmont, at least their operations in Nevada. And this was, when I was there, it was a massive discovery that was happening and unfolding under my eyes. So to have two big discoveries happen in my, you know, first 6 years of my career was pretty serendipitous. But I remember logging core that we were pulling out of the ground, and it was, you know, some of the highest grade and best looking core that I had ever seen. Now, what's funny about Carlin type systems is the gold is actually microscopic, so you can't actually see it. But what you can see is you can see really intense silicification, decarbonization. So there's lots of alteration that happens in these rocks, these sort of these discrete carbonate rocks. So we were pulling out intercepts and, you know, we're talking 20 grams per ton over 20 meters and we're logging this stuff and everyone's super excited. And that deposit or that property ended up being, I believe I got to double check the technical report, but I believe it was over 15 million ounces of gold. And that's now in full production. So actually they had offered me full time to come back and work with Barrick. I had done, sort of this special project for them where I helped, classify a bunch of the overburden sediments there, and received a few awards there. And they had offered me full-time employment down in Nevada, and wasn't quite ready to make the move to Nevada. It's a great state, but it's an interesting place. And I wasn't quite ready to move there, after college. So that's actually when I had picked up and went to SFU for my master's to continue to expand my technical and my academic experience. So that was just sort of a quick interlude there. I forgot to mention that time I spent with Barrick in Nevada. But yeah, and then to fast forward back to present day with Golden Metal, as you know, as I mentioned, things have come full circle for me with my experience in Nevada with Barrick, my experience with the consulting company in Nevada as well in Idaho. So it's a part of the world I know really well. I'm well connected down there. I understand the permitting. I understand the administration and how to operate down there. So it's already paying dividends as we continue to build this company out. I'm reaching out to old contacts and colleagues, and we're getting set up with, you know, drill contractors and geophysical contractors and all these type of things that are going to be really important for us to push the Golden Metal story forward. So that's a pretty long-winded overview of my background, but hopefully that gives everyone a little insight as to kind of where I've been the last 12, 13 years. And I guess since birth, so 31 years, mm-hmm. and where we're at in present day, March in London in 2022.
Yeah, it does. I mean, yeah, that's quite an extensive career, isn't it?
For such a young age as well, Oliver. I mean, it almost feels like Golden Metal Resources was built around yourself. You know, it's a bit like in a football team, you've got this kind of star striker or Lionel Messi or Ronaldo, and you kind of build the people and the projects round about them. It's just got that kind of feel. But obviously, you've got a wealth of experience in the area, so it kind of makes sense to, you know, assemble a portfolio of projects in that area. And obviously, the last jigsaw piece that just kind of slotted in was Pilot Mountain. I do have a question for you. So, I mean, obviously, I'm well aware of Pilot Mountain as Mark, because it used to be a part of Thor's portfolio, Thor Mining's portfolio. What is a cornerstone asset in your mind within the portfolio? Because obviously, you seem pretty excited about Golconda, but you know, obviously, there's a resource with Pilot Mountain. I think it's, from memory, the largest tungsten resource in the States. I think you might be able to correct me if I'm wrong, but I definitely think it's up there as number one or number two anyway.
Yeah, that's a good question in terms of what's cornerstone. And to answer your question, yes, it is, as far as I know as well, the largest tungsten resource in the U.S. And what's been really interesting the last couple of weeks here, and obviously the situation in Ukraine and Russia is quite heartbreaking. But what I think something that's sort of coming out of this is people understanding and realizing how important it is to have domestic sources of important commodities and metals. And I think the U.S. is realizing this as well. I mean, I think President Biden came out the last couple of days here and said they're going to focus on domestic supply of important commodities and oil and gas and things like that. Because the reality is, when these situations boil up, you know, when you're reliant on another country for your supply of a certain metal or for natural gas or for oil, it really sort of tips the balance of power in a way that's not favorable to you. So, you know, Paul and I were actually chatting yesterday about Pilot Mountain and the tungsten being the largest tungsten resource in the U.S. Now, what's really interesting about tungsten is the majority of the global supply of tungsten comes from China. And tungsten has very significant military applications. So, you know, this asset all of a sudden over the last couple of weeks here has just become so much more strategic Not only in the fact that Biden is saying we need to secure domestic supplies of various elements. Well, tungsten's on the USGS critical minerals list. Most of the international supply comes from China. So, this asset, I think, has become so much more important in just the last couple of weeks here, which is super exciting. Yeah. But in terms of cornerstone assets and what is cornerstone in gold and metal, we've built this package very strategically. The great thing about having Pilot Mountain, and besides the fact what I just told you about the strategic nature of tungsten, is the fact that it has the historic resource on it. 12.53 million tons at almost 0.3% tungsten trioxide. Now, what that means for gold and metal and why that's important is because, in this junior mining business, and one of the things I've learned is so often, or I've seen so often happen, is a company is built on high-risk exploration across their portfolio. Now, this obviously is mostly what companies do, but the reality is, if you go and drill a sort of a big, long shot hole into one of your major properties and don't hit, well, I find that these companies, their market caps get absolutely thrashed. And that's just the nature of the business. I mean, I've been around this industry my whole life. And I'm used to it. And that's what makes it exciting is because, sometimes you do drill and you get that big discovery. But I think what's important with the way we've built Pilot or the gold metal portfolio is with Pilot Mountain, we have the existing resource. So there's an in situ value there that we can sort of lean on to give us a sort of baseline valuation for the company. Now, if we go and drill every other project in our portfolio and don't hit, we still have that existing resource, which will give us a baseline valuation for the company without even doing anything. And that's a really important thing because it allows us to make sure that, we don't, if we drill one sort of, go for glory exploration hole and don't hit, we still are not going to get thrashed in the market like a lot of companies do. People will say, well, hey, we still have Pilot Mountain. And we've done that very strategically to make sure that we have a floor on our share price, which allows us to finance going forward years down the road in case we don't hit on any of the big exploration holes. But yep. We also give investors huge upside potential with the exploration that we have on our project. Now, what's interesting about Pilot Mountain is we had the existing resource, but what really got me excited about Pilot Mountain was the exploration upside. Now, all the historic operators have gone in there and there's essentially four outcropping deposits that sort of peak out of the post-mineral cover. And they sort of just drilled around the vicinity of those, right? And they put together a really nice tungsten resource to show for it. But the interesting thing is, we have about a kilometer and a half between each four of those deposits. If you go to our website, you'll see a map of how those four areas are located. But in between there, there's just a sort of a thin layer of post-mineral cover. And the historic guys, they didn't go in there and drill it. And the reality is when you have four exposed areas, all with essentially the exact same mineralogy, the exact same alteration. The reality is those four systems likely connect up at depth and under that post-mineral cover. So we essentially have this massive, 1.5 by 1.5 kilometer exploration target that is we're going to go in there, we're going to drill it. And that's going to be an easy way to increase the size and the grade of the resource. From its current levels, which are very impressive. Now, on top of that, we also have, and this is the part that really got me excited, was these copper-rich intercepts that were seen out east from surface in a lot of these areas. And essentially, these areas were drilled somewhat recently in about 2017, 2018, and then nothing after that. And we're getting to a much more copper-rich zone. Essentially, it's a copper and tungsten-rich zone. So some of your base metals are dropping off. But this is the area that gets me really excited about Pilot Mountain. So not only do we have the existing resource as it is without doing anything, we have a massive exploration target between the four deposits where we can increase the size and the grade of the resource, the existing resource. But on top of that, we have those blue sky exploration targets out east, which are much more copper-rich. So not only do we have the resource to give us sort of a baseline valuation, we have excellent exploration targets to the east. And we're not drilling some long shot exploration hole into an area that's never found mineralization. We're drilling near to an existing resource. That's where you want to be. Because the system that we're looking at here is large. When you have a footprint of that size, with that type of mineralization, it's a large footprint. So you're likely going to find more of it the more you drill and the further out you go.
Yeah.
So out east, there's a huge potential there. So in terms of what's our flagship asset, it's Pilot Mountain because of the resource, because of the tungsten, because of the exploration upside. But you know, Golconda Summit, I think, is a really important asset as well. And this is because, as I mentioned previously, how important Carlin type gold is in the state of Nevada. And I have extensive experience, as I mentioned, with Barrick Gold working in Carlin type systems, including the Cortez Hills, which is a 15 million ounce deposit. That's actually not that far from our Golconda Summit property. And the reason Golconda is so important is because what's interesting there is at surface, you have excellent gold grades at surface in the trenches. These are grades that rival and in some cases are greater than some of the nearby mines that are, you know, essentially mining different Carlin type systems in the area. But what's interesting here is all those really, really good gold interceptions that we're seeing at surface are in the upper plate rocks. Now, I'll try not to get too sort of technical here and boil you guys down too much. But the important thing to notice is that in northern Nevada, essentially there's this large sort of rift or this fault block that was transported to the east. And essentially it covers all what they call the lower plate strata in Nevada. So in the upper plate, it's a non-reactive host rock. It's a lot of sand and silt, but no carbonate. And the important thing about carbonate is that's what you need to react with the fluids to create Carlin-type systems. So in northern Nevada, all these mines I'm telling you about, they're typically found within little windows, erosional windows, into the lower plate rocks, which are your carbonates. Now, what's interesting here is on Golconda Summit, we have about 100-meter thick layer of upper plate rocks. And to see those type of gold grades in your upper plate rocks is very rare because they're so non-reactive. But what that means is, and there's been multiple faults mapped on Golconda Summit, sort of vertical faults. Now, what that means and most likely means is that we have vertical or subvertical faults that have allowed the gold from the lower plate rocks on the property to be remobilized, moves up the fault, and then gets deposited in your upper plate rocks. Now, to see gold grades as high as you do see in the upper plate rocks is likely indicative of what you are potentially could find in your lower plate strata. Now, what's interesting is on Golconda Summit, we have three very productive lower plate members that have been mapped to the west of our property in a road cut, all which extend under our property. Now, historic drilling that was done, there's been minimal drilling, but they've been shallow holes that have been in the upper plate rocks. Two holes intercepted the uppermost part of the top lower plate member. Now, that's important because we have essentially three lower plate members that have never, effectively never been drill tested on our property. And we have excellent signs of really high grade gold at surface, which means we're likely remobilizing that gold from the lower plate strata. So we're going in there. And what's interesting is as I mentioned, there's about 25 companies that are in Nevada or Nevada focused in Canada or in the U.S. And, you know, I've seen companies build 100 plus million Canadian market caps, drilling through 300-400 meters of upper plate rocks. And they get into the lower plate strata and they'll get, a sniff of Carlin type gold, maybe a bit of arsenic or mercury, which are typically indicator minerals of Carlin type gold. And people will get so excited about these drill holes because there might be a Carlin type system within a few kilometers of that drill hole. And I've seen these companies go absolutely insane because, and for good reason, if you strike into one of these Carlin type systems, I mean, they're monsters, right? So for us to have, you know, the upper plate rocks are only about 100 meters thick. We have three lower plate members that have never been drill tested. And we have extremely high grade gold at surface. I mean, this property alone could be a standalone in a company. So, you know, to answer your question about what's the flagship, it's Pilot Mountain. But we give our investors tremendous upside potential with Golconda Summit and with Pilot Mountain with those exploration targets I mentioned. So the portfolio has been built really strategically. We have that baseline resource, and then we have excellent blue sky exploration potential on Golconda Summit, on Pilot Mountain, as well as Garfield and Stonewall as well.
Yeah, and the good thing is as well, I mean, these properties are either 100% owned or the option to earn into 100%. So it's easier to deal with when you guys are the full owners and operators.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And that was very strategic. We wanted to make sure that we own 100% of these projects, so we have full exposure to the upside. On top of that, it's worth mentioning that all four of them are on BLM, the Bureau of Land Management ground, which is super important because that is the ground that allows for the most efficient permitting that you can find anywhere in the US. So in terms of permitting, we'll have no issues getting permitted for drill holes, trenching, whatever we want to do. And hopefully later on, in more sort of mine development, we'll should be able to fast track that type of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And just stepping back from talking about the projects, I mean, where are you guys exactly in the listing process at the moment? If you can say, because I know sometimes it's hard to say exactly where you're at. And I'm not looking for timelines or anything like that, just maybe a wee snapshot of how things are going.
Yeah. So, no, I mean, it's a good question to ask. You know, the timeline we put forward previously in other, I think, news releases and various documents, that still remains intact. There's been no setbacks whatsoever. Everything's been moving forward nicely. So still targeting end of April, early May. And I don't see any reason why that would get delayed. Like I said, everything is moving on nicely. We haven't really got up on any snags. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on in the background. We have advisory calls, sort of all hands advisory calls weekly. We have board calls weekly, making sure that everyone's aligned. Anything that's sort of holding the process back, we sort of, you know, identify at those meetings and make sure that that's sort of dealt with. So everything's moving along really nicely. The advisory team we put together is fantastic across the board. The board and the management team at Golden Metal is absolutely amazing to work with. Everyone's super keen. There's a really good, diverse sort of experience base there, from finance to technical to accounting to capital markets. So yeah, everything's moving along really nicely, Kenny.
Yeah, and of course with Pilot Mountain, I mean, the guy that probably knows most about it is Mick Billen. So he's came along with the project, so it gives you a bit of continuity.
Yeah, no, exactly. And that was very strategic as well. He's been involved with the project for quite some time now. So his just sort of background knowledge has been super valuable and will continue to be as we push this project forward.
Yeah, and of course, just jumping back to projects, there's another couple of projects in the portfolio as well that are probably at an earlier stage of exploration.
Yeah, so Stonewall and Garfield, and you know, we're always looking for additional assets to add to the portfolio. So I'm doing due diligence on, I would say, 2 to 3 properties a week that are all in Nevada. Always looking for new opportunities to bring things into the portfolio. Now, obviously, the majority of the exploration dollars are going to go into Golconda Summit and Pilot Mountain this year. But, you know, being involved in running previous junior mining companies, it's important to make sure that you're bringing up or advancing other projects in your portfolio to a drill ready stage. You know, so with Stonewall and Garfield, these are, you know, big sort of alteration footprints that we're seeing. Stonewall's epithermal, really robust, you know, over 2 kilometer long epithermal quartz vein that's been very minimally tested. And then Garfield, we have, you know, really exciting sort of skarn type copper gold showings at surface, really generally untested. You know, as a geologist, these are projects that get me really excited because we can go and do big soil sampling surveys, generate new targets. We can do property-wide geophysics, stake more ground, build these properties up. So that's what we're going to do year one. We're going to be working on these in the background. We're going to be generating new additional news flow for investors to get excited about. And then we just continue to move them up to the drill ready stage. So that's what we're going to do with those two.
Okay. Excellent. Mark, sorry, I've been talking too much. I'll let you jump in.
No, it's okay. I mean, I've just been letting Oliver, yeah, you're very, very good there at just telling us all about what's going on. So I've just been quite keen just to sit and listen, really, and get a picture of what's going on. Pilot Mountain, of course, yeah, I'm familiar with, of course, was a shareholder in Thor Mining. And that was always, you know, one of the flagship projects, but didn't really seem to progress that much. But hopefully that can change now that it's under the wing of GMR. But Yeah, I mean, thank you very much for giving us everything there about your background and what's going on in GMR. IPO, when are you expecting that? Have you got a timeline roughly?
Yeah, so the timeline that we've sort of highlighted in previous announcements is still intact. So we're looking at sort of end of April, early May.
Okay. So not too long. Okay. Well, that's good. Well, I wonder if we can finish off, Oliver. I'll throw you in and ask you if you would be up for doing a 60-second challenge, which is effectively where you have 60 seconds, roughly speaking, to really give investors some reasons, 3, 4, whatever reasons, as to why they might consider investing or becoming a shareholder in Golden Meta Resources. So, I mean, would you be up for that?
Absolutely. Of course.
Okay. Well, I'll just open a stopwatch and want to keep an eye on the nearest clock yourself. But I can count you down in 3, 2, 1. Take it away.
Yeah. So, I mean, a lot of stuff we've covered, but, you know, the main reasons why I think investors need to be looking and focusing on Golden Meta is one, we're essentially the only pure play Nevada focused company that you can get exposure to on the London markets. But on top of that, we have built up a team that has extensive experience in Nevada, which is incredibly important when you're operating these properties. Now, the thing that investors should most get excited about is the properties that we've put together. You know, as we've discussed in this podcast, with Pilot Mountain's existing resource, we have a baseline valuation to point to. But most importantly, investors can get really excited about the exploration upside that we have at all four of our properties. As a geologist, my goal and my dream is to always make discoveries. That's why I'm doing this. And that's why, you know, we started Golden Meta and I built a portfolio that I know we can make discoveries at. So you get exposure to what we're doing at the four properties. We're going to be drilling, doing exploration across the portfolio. It's going to be super exciting times in 2022 and beyond for Golden Meta.
Excellent. Well, there you go. 1 minute, 10 seconds. So that's good.
Okay. No, it's fine. It's hard to fit it all in the 60 seconds there, Mark. There's so much to talk
about. Oh, yes, I'm sure. But you did quite well.
Perfect. Yeah. No, it's been fantastic to have you on, Oliver. And we definitely need to get you back on as we get closer to the IPO, and you can give us all an update on what's going on and what your plans are for the rest of 2022. But it's definitely an exciting time, and it's always good to see new companies coming to the market and ones that are keen to fly the flag before listing. There's too many companies that just come to market and nobody's heard of them until the day they list. So it's good that you guys are out doing the PR and just letting the investors know that we're here. And if you want to invest, you know, get in touch, basically.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, this is huge kudos to Power Metal and Paul and the way they operate. They're some of the best at keeping investors informed. So being a spin out of Power, we inherit all the same IR people, all the same sort of support staff that help Power do that. So, you know, the sort of, you know, communication that you get from Power as an investor, you can expect the exact same from Golden Meta and from FDR, which is a great system. It works. So we're flying the flag early. We got a lot to talk about. So yeah, definitely stay tuned as we move towards listing here, and most importantly, post-listing, where we're going to be generating lots of really exciting news flow in the best jurisdiction in the world.
Excellent. Well, that's a good note to finish on. Thank you very much, Oliver Reason, the CEO of GMR, the upcoming IPO.
Cheers, Oliver.
Thanks for having me on, Jets. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to another podcast from Market Musings with Ben and Russell. Tune in next time.